Show Recaps Theater presents West Side Story, directed by Steven Spielberg. Oh my God, tonight's the night. Wait a minute, no, that's a different post-show recaps podcast. Anyway, enjoy the show.
All right, we are back at the movies. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host Ariel. How you doing, Ariel?
I am walking on air. I'm like doing these weird like tippy toe movements in the street now. It's weird, but I'm
doing
really
so much snapping these days. I can't help it.
Yes, no, I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so happy that we are not alone. We are in the hands of someone who is somewhat of an expert, not any kind of official expert, but I think we can say that she's an expert in this specific West Side Story topic. It's Melissa Woodward from the YA podcast. I am so excited personally that you're here, Melissa. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I know, and I was talking to Grace a while ago about like, oh, what movie? And I was like, oh, I really love West Side Story. And
months ago,
a long time.
Months ago, I think when we launched, I said, if there's like anything you want to come on, you're like, West Side Story. It comes out in December. I'll come on.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah,
it's true. I did.
There's been a lot of buzz about this movie, I think, as it has come out, a lot of acclaim. So yeah, it's got buzz. This the Steven Spielberg remake of West Side Story.
It had a really bad first weekend in the box office, so you know, who knows, right?
Yeah, the box office is so hard to predict though right now. I think with COVID still and the Omicron variant, I think people are still a little bit hesitant to like go back to the movies. I don't know. There's a couple big stuff. You know, The Matrix is next week. Spider-Man is this week. So maybe people are like waiting for that. But I don't know. I feel like everybody who's watched it has really enjoyed this movie. But what is it about West Side Story, Melissa? What was it that you were itching to talk about?
I did piano, like Royal Conservatory growing up. And so part of that is you have to take music history exams kind of regularly as you go. And one of the songs from that I had to, you know, I had these tapes, that, you know, back in the day, because it was the 90s and early 2000s, I had like tapes that I had to listen to and be able to like identify what songs they were. And West Side Story, particularly, they were excerpts from Tonight and Mambo that I had to like be able to identify. And so that was my first introduction to it. And then I went to see it around that time. So I think I was like 10. And so I've just like always really loved the music from this. I think there's so many different songs that I really love. And it's just a very like, you know, it's all a very classic story. And the dancing is so great. I'm trying to remember, I don't know that I've seen the original movie more than once. And then I rewatched it today. But yeah, I think it's just, I saw it at a very impressionable age. So it was my first time going to see a musical live ever. And so that was also made it very special.
My first live musical was Mamma Mia.
They're the same.
They're this equal, the equal, you know,
that is also to both of those musicals. Famously Shakespearean. That's true.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, speaking of the music, I mean, kind of tragic timing for this movie to come out just after the passing of Stephen Sondheim, who we talked about appeared in Tick, Tick, Boom, a movie we covered with Brendan Fitzpatrick a few weeks ago. But yeah, it's kind of sad that like just before the new one comes out.
Yeah, because West Side Story was his first lyrics for a musical. Like this was his first project doing that, which was pretty remarkable at the time.
Yeah, and I am not somebody who had watched the original movie. I still haven't. I meant to watch it before, but I didn't have time. But the music is so like memorable. It's so famous, right? Like so many of these songs I know, even though I've never seen the movie, sort of broke through pop culture, right? Ariel, what's your history with West Side Story?
I was there.
Which were you, the Sharks or the Jets?
I was a Dolphin. I was in between. No, I have seen, like, for sure, I've seen the original a bunch of times. I really did want to see I think it was like 2018, there was a Broadway revival. I was kind of interested in seeing it. I didn't make it, but I've seen the original a bunch of times, and I'll be honest, I wasn't like that excited about the movie only because I was worried. Like, it wasn't like, oh, this again. It was more like, do we need this? Are they going to do a good job? Like,
yeah,
that's more what my worry was. And it's like one of the few times that I've been happy to be wrong about something.
Yeah, I didn't know that the movie had such a, I didn't know that there was like, I mean, this is my ignorance here, but like racial tension in this, this movie. And then I'm like, realize that that's what it is. And you're like, okay, that's like, there's a lot of that in 2021. Okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense that they want to like maybe put, even though it's set in 1957, put a modern lens on this movie. But Spielberg, like, is Spielberg the guy we're going to do? I don't know. I thought the movie was very good. So, yeah. Who knew Steven Spielberg was good at making movies?
I had that initial, like, do we need this? And I still feel a little bit like, okay, so that was almost identical to the original. Like, there's some significant changes that we can talk about, but it's super, super true to the original. And in a way, I'm appreciative of that, and I like how that played out, and part of me is like, but did we need this? I don't know if we did. So I have some like mixed feelings on that.
That's really interesting. I think, you know, let's get existential about remakes. Like, what is the point if you just, you know, straight up, is it just to get like new people, like somebody who, I know there are people out there who sort of have this idea, like there's people like, I can't watch a movie that was made like before the 80s, or, you know, I can't watch an old movie for whatever reason,
right, or black and white, whatever it is,
or black and white movies. Yeah, so I don't know, maybe, yeah, just get a new generation into West Side Story. I don't know.
This felt like that's what it was for. It's like, oh, we're just gonna make it with like better camera equipment and then make people love the new one. And I do think that Steven Spielberg had some very specific ideas in terms of, like, you know, crazy idea, actually casting people who are Puerto Rican or of Puerto Rican descent in those roles, and like those kinds of things I think are really valuable.
That's true.
But the story is still one that was like, the original, you know, I was reading something today that was like, this, the original was still made by four Jewish men. Like, it's, and like that didn't change. Like, they didn't adapt the story in any way. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the like stereotypes and stuff that are in the original are still there now. So I was half expecting it to be set in a different time. I was not expecting it to be set in the 50s.
I kind of thought it was going to be set in modern day as well. Even the trailers didn't lead me to believe necessarily. I guess you probably could have spotted, but yeah, I definitely thought it was going to be a modern setting.
I mean, Ansel Elgort's ugly pants didn't tip you off.
Ugly pants.
Yeah, they're so wide. And then I went and watched the original, and none of them have pants that wide. I don't even understand why they're so wide.
They
so
made
big.
They needed to make changes, Melissa, like we were yeah. saying. I mean,
these
I will
the
say
changes they made.
Speaking of Steven Spielberg a little bit, I have, like, one of the reasons that I was worried was he obviously has a very long history and a very long resume of good movies, like classics, you know, very classic Hollywood, capital H Hollywood.
Like what?
But a lot of his
name
the five movies that you like.
Yeah.
A lot of the movies that he has made recently, I either haven't liked or haven't even seen. So, like, to me, this is easily his best movie since, like, I mean, I'm looking at the thing now, since like 2002, when he made Catch Me If You Can, and everything after that, and like, I guess Munich maybe in 2005. Everything after that feels pretty unnecessary, and this one is like,
even like The Post.
He's arguably having more fun than some of these cast people, and it's like it's crazy the energy.
And I think this is his first musical too, right? Which is pretty. It's a pretty heavy one to take on.
Yeah, it's his first musical, and like from the beginning when I saw like the camera start to move through the musical, like one of the things I think Melissa and I will talk about a little bit is like we're both fans of So You Think You Can Dance, and I mean this in the best possible way. I was getting a lot of So You Think You Can Dance vibes because it's like very well executed, choreographed, like explosive and controlled movement is just, it's cool to see on camera.
The redoing of the dance scenes is my favorite part of the remake. It is the absolute, like, if for nothing else, it would be the reason I would recommend people go see this movie. Also, the act, Anita, she was on So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh. Okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know that before, like until after I saw the movie. And I'm looking, I'm like, how did I miss this? Like, where is she from? And it's because she got kicked out in the top 20, which is like sad.
Right. Yeah. That's why we don't know her by name. But yeah.
But it's I mean, like, I did, speaking of her, I did, she's my favorite part of the movie, period.
Same.
And Ariana DeBose, I believe is how you say it. And she was in, I didn't realize this till after, she was in this Netflix movie, The Prom, which is based on like the Broadway show. Not very good, but she gets like her own solo number. And I remember being like, oh, she's really good. Like much more star power than you would expect from like a tertiary at best character in that film.
And the other thing she is the original Bullet in Hamilton.
Oh,
And so she's in the filmed version of
that
it.
That you've seen. I've never seen Atlas, but that you've seen Grace.
Well, I'm not saying, oh, because I recognize her. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Yes. Yeah.
I see. Okay, fair.
Yeah, it's one of those where, like, thinking back, I was like, okay, yeah, I can totally see how that's the same person, but I didn't recognize her until I was looking it up either. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, so not only was she in, like, the original ensemble and in the filmed ensemble, but she had this, like, very specific role in the ensemble, which I think is cool.
She's also in Schmigadoon, you know, the Apple TV musical comedy with the greatest name of all time.
It all makes sense.
Yeah. Before we dive a little bit deeper into the actual movie, and we'll get spoiler filled. We didn't normally do see it or skip it. I'm certainly in the see it camp. I think it was really fun to go see in theaters. I think it really works on the big screen. You know, it's a Spielberg movie. And as you said, I think like the dancing scenes work really well. So I think it's definitely worth going to see and check out. So I would recommend seeing it. Lissa, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if you love the original, it'll be neat to see these like dance and musical numbers redone in this way. And I think if you haven't seen West Side Story, you should just go see West Side Story. So yeah, I think it works. I think it's worth seeing.
Yeah, I think for sure go, you know, if you can see it on a big screen and you're comfortable doing that, as we always say, like see it on as big a screen as possible, because it's just like a lot of joy. I think to Melissa's point, I agree, whether you've seen the original or not, whether you know what you're getting into or not, there's a lot of joy and happiness and like yes, there's darkness and there's tragedy, but there's a lot of emotion to be felt. And I think it's genuinely beautiful. Like, you know, dance is art and art is beautiful. That's my final say.
Yeah.
we can just end the pod there.
That's it. Yeah. 12
and
minutes.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to throw it to our ads, and we come back. We're going to dive deeper into the West Side Story. Okay, we're back. Yeah, let's dive into it. Full spoilers. I guess one thing we should say up top as we talk about this movie, the cast includes Ansel Elgort, who was pretty recently accused of a sexual assault. So puts a little bit of a wrinkle into, you know, our enjoyment of the movie, or, you know, our ethics of watching the movie. We're not going to get into that fully today, but there is a great article on Variety, how West Side Story tried to contain its Ansel Elgort problem. I think it's definitely worth reading, definitely checking out. Yeah. Okay, big picture. Where should we even start? Where should we start, Melissa?
For me, like the moment it started was this like hit of nostalgia for me. Like the whistling and the drumming in that intro music. I just like so much of it. They basically like, as far as I can tell, changed very little about the actual like orchestration and everything. And I think that's because like Leonard Bernstein is really good at what he does, and like the original music is so good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so just like that like nostalgia hit from the very beginning for me was very cool. And then them dancing menacingly through the streets holding paint cans was very funny. And I have a note.
I love the campiness of this movie. Like I have,
and the original is campy too. It's meant to be.
I've seen like West Side Story be like satired or mocked like in this way. And I think sometimes when you like, oh, it's like it's more ridiculous than it actually is. And then you're watching, it's like, no, it's pretty ridiculous. Like the way they're like, it's like snapping and moving and like, I don't know, but it just for whatever reason works so well. It's so fun.
Yeah, and the beginning, like I loved how it's playing with your expectations, because the beginning is like very extended. There's just what, before you even see a character, there's like a huge wide sweeping shot. You see the city, you see like Lincoln Center, and it's like and you hear the whistling and you're like expecting it to happen sooner, but you kind of got to sit with it before you finally see like the guy come out of the basement area. Basically, you see the first character and like you hear the big like percussion hit. It's really well done. I will keep saying this. Like, I did not expect to smile so much during this movie, and it's difficult not to for a lot of parts.
I think the biggest thing that I think they did better in this version is it just feels bigger. Like all of the, in watching the original, all of the dance scenes and stuff, they often happen in like one room. Mm. And so they just feel really like small and contained. And here, like, America goes from being sung in like one tiny room to being sung in the streets in the middle of the day with like dozens of spectators. And it just feels so much bigger and elaborate. And they do that for most of the songs through here, which I find really cool. So that's kind of the big thing, that like just the dance choreography you can do when you have that much more space, and then the like the brightness of the colors when you shoot at things in the middle of the day. And yeah, it just all felt like bigger and brighter, which was very enjoyable.
It's shot really well. I think the cinematography is really good. I'm even thinking of like little things that are like the sideways camera angle, you know, and just the way that I don't know, I guess to feel, I don't know really what it's evoking, but you know, it's just shot beautifully. I have a question for you. Did your version have subtitles?
None of the versions have subtitles.
Okay. I thought that was a really interesting and really great choice. I think I could see their critique of like, I don't know what they're saying, but I almost think that is like, I think that works really well for the movie, because I think that in the way that, I don't know, like in some ways I could see that would feel like isolating, that you struggle, but like, I don't know. I think that them like speaking their language in these moments, like the acting is well done. Like it's really well acted, this movie, that like, I can tell what they're feeling and what they're like maybe trying to get across, even if they're not necessarily speaking English. And I think the way this movie, you know, plays the cop,
Corey Stoll.
Yeah. Like when he's in the, and he's like telling them, right, he's like, speak English. I think there's something about it that works, that like, we didn't need the Spanish subtitles in this movie. It's a really interesting choice that I don't think I've seen many movies do.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was great. And I know Steven Spielberg talked about it in an interview that I read, where he wanted like English and Spanish to kind of have equal weight. Mm-hmm. And didn't need to like, oh, well, if they're Spanish, then we're like putting the English on top of it in the subtitles, which I thought was cool. And yeah, like two Canadians on the pod who took French instead of Spanish, I was like, I don't know what they're saying, but I could follow along.
Yeah, they didn't. They never lost me because they were speaking a language that I didn't understand, I felt like.
Yeah, I did wonder, you know, as I'm a Spanish speaker. Yes. I've spoken on the pod about it before, and there was so much like great, so many like little jokes that they would insert, like especially I'm thinking of the scene where Rita Moreno, and we will get to her, is talking to Tony, and she's like basically translating like phrases for him, and there's this joke where he says, I want to be able to say like, I want to be with you forever or something like that. And she says in Spanish, she says, really? And he starts to write down really. It's just like very funny. But yeah, I was curious. It's nice to hear that, Grace. Like, I was curious how it felt. Like I do think, and you know, I've seen foreign movies before that weren't in Spanish, so I know what the experience is when you don't understand the language. And when you just leave it for people to like use context clues, I think people get it for the most part. Like there's a lot in nonverbal communication that exists. I mean, especially in a musical, you know, it's all very exaggerated, more so than a quote unquote normal movie would be, a non-musical movie. So I think I was personally like thrilled. I was like, wait, there are no subtitles? I didn't want to get my hopes up. I was like, they have to be coming. Oh my God, they're not coming. Oh my God, this is crazy.
The way the movie is shot though, I did think my movie theater messed up, and I did think that they had like zoomed in too much, because there are times where like the way it's shot is like people's heads are, and maybe that like happens in other movies, I just don't notice it, but because there's no subtitles, like I think they zoomed in too much.
Canadian theaters would never, everybody's like,
with their mouths, Cineplex might,
they actually might. It's like
it is funny, Grace, because I noticed the one time that I noticed the head thing at all when they had Corey Stoll on camera.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, like that wig looks so dumb. Like I don't understand why you need it. Like his character's wearing a hat, and when he takes off his hat, he's bald. Like some people are bald, some cops are bald. Like I don't get it, but whatever. But at one point they chop off the wig with the frame, and I'm like, he looks so normal again. Like, he looks great.
I don't know. Okay, so it's not just me that like it does seem like it's like cut off at the
top. But that was the only time I noticed.
Yeah. But yeah, beautifully shot. I think all the number. Is there one that stands out to either of you as like your favorite?
It's America number? For me. Like, just it's so much bigger and yeah, just beautiful than the first one, I think.
Yeah, and that like it's not mine, but I will just comment on America real quick since you brought it up. It's so beautiful, and I can't help but think of Anita Ariana DeBose's like dress and the way she like
so good,
incredible, like dancing in the street. If it reminded me of In the Heights a little bit, because they filmed a lot of that, you know, some of it on soundstage also, but like they tried to make it look like they were standing in the streets, just like, and there's something so beautiful about no traffic, just people standing in the streets all doing the same choreography. It's like, oh my god, this is so beautiful. But really for me, the song that has haunted me because of Ariana DeBose's performance in it and her like her enunciation is A Boy Like That, I think the song is called. I just like it's haunted me. Like, it's so tragic, the emotion, the like, I honestly could take or leave the Maria part. Like, I don't even care. Yeah. I just like I want more of Anita. God, and it's so emotional.
There's parts of these songs that I really love because that is so like, you can feel that she's projecting, right? Like, Bernardo was not any better. Like, Bernardo went to that expecting to kill somebody and did kill Riff, right? But and so she's like clearly projecting all of the pain that she's feeling and is like, you know, a boy like that is going to bring you sorrow, and because a boy like that brought her sorrow, like that's, I just like, you know, I don't know, there's some parts to these songs that I just really
love. Murdered my love, he'll murder, oh my god, yeah. it's so good. What about you, Grace?
I think America is my favorite. It's such like a well put together number. As you like the dancing in the street at the end is really good. I thought the like the way that they used the set for Gia Officer Krupke was really fun. Yeah. There's just little things that they do in that scene in one room. It's very much like, I think that to me, like you're talking about, like I don't have familiarity with the Broadway version or the original movie, and you're talking about how some of them feel so small. Sometimes what I, you know, it's so fun to see how you can take one small, like that's not a very large set, and to turn it into, there's like the way that they like take the bench and they put it down so that he's like lying on the therapist's chair. They like the bench, they lift it up and it's like has bars on it. And so like it's the jail cell, like the way that they use basically like one major prop and then the rest of this room, it's just really well done. And as somebody who's like not seen West Side Story before, I thought, yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah. So the original Officer Krupke happens on like a sidewalk. And so they do similar stuff with the bench where it's like, you know, at one point, although it's all sung by Riff, I thought it was an interesting choice to give it to somebody else.
He's not in it at all, right?
Yeah. But to have him like lying down on the bench and stuff. This is another one of those songs that I like, I think it means more than it does at first glance, like the passing along of society's ills onto somebody else. Like, I thought it, like, it's a really interesting story while also being just like super catchy and super fun. And I like really enjoy the boys playing like the different, the judge and the social worker and whatever. Like, it's all very fun.
Yeah.
This was the most, that was the most unexpected song for me. Like, as far as going into it, I'm like, oh, this is the Officer Krupke song. Like, I don't care. And by the end of it, I was like, holy F, like they knocked it out of the park. I think it's like the most, for me, like I said, it's like the most unexpected, brilliant adaptation of, or like, I guess, update of that song, because they do a lot with it. They make the room feel so much bigger. Like, it's ironic, like we're talking about how some of these songs, they opened it up and they put it in the street, but in this case they kind of did the opposite, yet made it feel bigger than it was and like gave time for everybody else. Really like genius. I don't know, I was kind of blown away by this one, even though it's not my absolute favorite, but it was definitely surprising.
Yeah, it's not my favorite song. It's just the way that they use for this is a thing we've talked about a bit before, where it's like, why do you choose like a movie as like your like medium? And this does feel like, okay, you can see where like how this is the movie version of this song. And it's pretty fun.
The other song that I actually think was so it's a kind of a strong change from the original is Somewhere. So they give it to Valentina, who's like not even a character in the original. It's Doc is so it's kind of the person that's supposed to be kind of her late husband in this movie is right. The character that we see in the original. And Somewhere is originally sung by Tony and Maria, right? And here it's sung by Valentina. And I really loved it. And it's smaller than the original as a result. Like, it's just her sitting in this, sitting in her pharmacy, but it's like, it's her singing the song of like hope and hoping for better and, you know, things that she went through with her relationship. Now she sees like the next generation going through the same things and like things aren't getting better and she's still hopeful that maybe they could be. And so it was funny, like America I loved because it was so much bigger than the original, and Somewhere I loved because it was smaller than the original and like
she's just
intimate,
like,
and connected.
Singing into a mirror, right? Like,
yeah.
Gosh, Rita Moreno was really stellar in this
so
movie.
Good.
I love like she's in the original, right?
So she's Rita in, or sorry, she's Anita in the original. Yeah.
Which just makes it to me that much more impressive that Ariana DeBose is able to create such a commanding performance. Because I can't imagine, like, as you know, you hear all the stories and Steven Spielberg has said, like, on record how much of like a mentor basically Rita Moreno turned into, like, both obviously her connection to the original production, but also like the age difference and the kids, and you know, it was all love. But I can't imagine how intimidating that would have been to like have the original person who's basically most famous for portraying that role, like, basically standing over your shoulder at all times, and still have the like, not courage, but the confidence to put on such a performance. It's kind of insane. It makes it, like, in my opinion, that much more of a big deal.
I think all four of the main casts are well, there's more, I guess. If I'm thinking, like, I mean, also he's fine. I think he's good. I think I thought that Rachel Zegler, I didn't think she was like perfect as Maria. I don't have any frame of reference for like what Maria is supposed, if, like, you know, is this feel pretty true to the original Maria?
I liked her. So Natalie Wood plays the original Maria, who's like not Latina in any way,
right.
Which is not great. She's like Russian. It's like looking up. I actually really like, and I don't know that I can like totally blame it to the acting. Maria in the first one is kind of I don't know, she's boring. Like, she sings pretty, but otherwise she's just like this very like innocent, starry-eyed, like, I've moved to America and I love a boy, and like that's it.
I can't feel that way about this one. I don't know.
She was just like the tiniest bit like more willing to stand up to Bernardo, which I thought was good. Like, it's like it's not a lot, but it was a little bit, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
But like compared to Anita, like not at all, right? So
yeah,
Maria's kind of a boring character. Like, I'm not gonna, but you know,
this happens sometimes. This is like
probably so is Juliet, right?
Sometimes the curse of, you know, these big movies is like, you know, oftentimes like sitcoms will have like this ensemble cast, and whoever is the lead is like the most boring, right? They kind of like are need to be in some ways, so everybody else can be a bit more eccentric. So I don't know, Tony and Maria, they're fine. They're fine.
I think Tony and Maria were like, while Anita is my favorite character, I think Tony and Maria were the best pair, because I agree that separately I was kind of like, eh, but when they come together, God, I was like sitting there watching their first scene together when they meet each other behind the bleachers.
And the like slowest yes, no to man.
And there's that stupid yes. And there's that stupid like lens flare blue thing that Steven Spielberg keeps doing anytime they're together.
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God, I think this is working. Like, there's just, to me, there was just like this total chemistry. Like, when she said, "You're tall," I was like, I buy it.
You're tall.
Because I was thinking the same thing. I was
tiny.
Like, oh, wow, the height difference here is like very stark. And then
is Natalie Wood tiny in the original? Because
she's 5'1" and he's 6'4".
Oh, okay. Gosh, yeah.
So there's like a big whole like toddler between them.
Yeah. but this scene, they do, so there's like the dance in the original where they've got their arms outstretched and they're kind of doing like a slow, they do like a weird like knee swivel thing and then they snap, and they did that for a second in this, and I was like, oh, that's a good callback. I love that. Like, so yeah
they're like
yeah,
little
they
birds
the
I mean,
dates.
He's a little bird, she's a little bird, he's a big, he's like a flamingo,
he's a big bird.
He's a big bird. I did like, I thought the ending is really, I mean, like, it's very, you know, it's Romeo and Juliet, you know, the,
yeah, spoiler alert, if anyone, you know, has seen Romeo and Juliet, they die.
He thinks it's that, he thinks that she's dead. So he goes and calls out Chino, and then Chino kills him just as she's like arriving. I thought that was all really well acted. But yeah, Ana de Bos as Anita is really good. I thought David Alvarez as Bernardo is really good. We talked about Rita Moreno as Valentina. And I think Mike faced fast. I'm not sure.
I loved Riff. I loved what they did with Riff too.
I was like captivated by Riff the whole time. I did think he is time traveling John Mulaney.
I don't disagree here.
But I thought he was really, really good. I thought he was great.
Yeah, really.
They make
good.
Riff so much more sympathetic in this movie than he is in the original.
Oh yeah.
Definitely a good tragic character. Like, I think in general they did fill out some, and much more on like the Puerto Rican character side of things. It was the original production, as far as I remember, it was like much more skewed in like the American characters, like as far as like giving them weight and giving them backstory. And this one, you know, Bernardo's a boxer and Maria gets a little bit more story because, you know, I think she had been taking care of her dad and now she's new. Even Anita, you know, there's a story about like
Anita wants to open up her own dress, shop.
If the only reason they had that story is so that then they could like swivel through all the fabric hanging in the apartment while they're singing, then yes, then amazing, yes.
And then kiss through it, which I thought was weird. But
I was like, I hate it. And then they did it. I'm like, okay, I love it.
You're right. That's how I felt too. I was like, oh, that's weird, but cool. But yeah, Riff like gets none of this in the original, right? Like,
oh, really?
He's just kind of like the head of the Jets. He's buddies with Tony. But this whole, like, they really carry the weight of, like, why he's so passionate about the Jets, like, why he clings to that so tightly. And the line of, like, womb to tomb was never a joke for me. Like, oh, I like, because they say that a few times in the original and, like, and in this one too. And I just thought that, I don't know, he had some parts where you could see why, like, this is all he has. Like, life has dealt him a really hard time. When like Tony and Maria are talking on their date and he talks about it, and Maria's like, we've had a hard time too. And he's like, yeah, but you have family and you have hope. Like, Riff has none of that. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, like both of these groups of youths have had a hard time.
The youths.
I did speaking of Riff, I did love that scene early on in the basement where Tony's it might be Tony's first scene, and Riff is like, he's trying to explain why he's like, you know, done with the Jets and what like he went through. I think this is a new, right, Melissa, this whole storyline of like him almost killing that other kid.
Yeah, and Tony going to prison is also all new for this movie.
Oh,
right. And he starts to say, I want to be a different person, this and that. And Riff interrupts me. He's like, all right, you're too deep for me. Like, I can't listen to this. I did like it because Riff wants to like cling to the thing that feels good, cling to the thing that like makes sense to him. And that's the Jets. Like, he doesn't want to be existential. He just wants to like, you know, like, I mean, I don't think he wants to kill people, but he wants to like have fun and dance in the street and snap.
Yeah, I mean, two more quotes that I pulled. The whole world has been angry at Riff since he was born. Mm-hmm. And I can't talk my guys out of making trouble. Trouble is what they're made of.
That's good.
He believes it.
I mean, this is the thing where, like, I thought Riff was very compelling. I think that, like, yeah, they do a good job of, like, establishing why he's so angry. And yet, like, what he's choosing to do is totally wrong, right? Yeah. Like obviously, he's like, they're just being racist and terrible. He, like, literally uses slurs in this movie. And I think that, like, I could see that getting critiqued a little bit. Like, you're sympathizing sort of basically the white supremacist group. But also, like, I think that that's real. Like, I think that they're, like, it does happen. There is a reason why, like, people, white young people, get, like, radicalized. I know that this is set in 1957, and I'm very much, like, thinking about this from like a 2021 lens. Like, there's a reason why people do that, which is like fear, basically, right? Fear that an unjust fear, unfounded fear that people are coming and taking jobs and doing whatever. But yeah, I just think this performance is really good. And also, as someone who had never seen West Side Story, very surprising him die in the middle of the movie.
Yeah. You know, he dies and then there's still like half hour, 45 minutes left of this movie, and you're like, wait, what? Like, yeah. But I also think, like, and I can't remember if it's really touched on in the remake, but it is something that's, like, alluded to by the cops in the first one, is that, like, the Jets are one generation away from immigrating to the US, right? Like, they're basically, like, their parents were Irish and Italian immigrants who were forced to leave their homes and move to America, hope for a better life. And so it's highlighting, like, the hypocrisy there of they're like, oh, we're from here and you're not and whatever. And so I think that's, anyway, it's just kind of an interesting thing to reflect on that, like, and I think they get called out on that at one point. I don't remember if it's in the remake, but definitely in the original, like, the cop is, like, going around and he's like, oh yeah, but I know your dad and, like, where he's from, and I know your mom and where she, like, and basically tells him, like, you're not any different. Like, you're just doing this because you're feeling displaced and, like, life has given you a really hard hand. And, like, now there's this other group that you feel like you have, this is the only thing you have, and they're coming, and, like, this is not it, y'all. Like, this is not how you should be going about this.
Yeah.
It's very bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Corey Stoll's cop character, he has a line, something along the lines of, like, you're the last generation of white boys who didn't make it, or something like that. But he tries to point out earlier than that, you know, that they have that in common. They're both about to get kicked out of the same area so that they can build basically Lincoln Center, which
is also not in the original.
Which is not in the original. Yeah. And ironically, is also where the movie premiered. Like, it has had its premiere at Lincoln Center. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it was very, like, you know, intentional.
Poor Valentina working at that pharmacy around all of that construction work.
You think they left just the pharmacy up and they
it does look, it's a set piece, right? It's like everything is rubble, every building is being taken down except for her little pharmacy. What business does she get? I think, you know, I talked about Riff dying in the middle of the movie and Bernardo. And I think that there's something, again, when I talked earlier about how much I loved how campy it was. And I think that the juxtaposition between the campiness of that movie and then the seriousness of, like, character death in the middle of the movie works really well as well. Like, kind of, like, lulls you into a false sense of security. Like, they're singing and dancing, and then two of them get stabbed and are dead in a park, a salt storage facility.
It's like a salt storage facility, right?
Yeah.
Salting the street.
Yeah. So, like, I don't need to explain. Probably a bunch of people are like, yeah, that's West Side Story, you idiot. Came out in 1960.
Yeah, there's a reason this has done so well.
I'm telling you, this is, I did very much like it. For the first time in 2021.
So they moved the timing of two of the songs. And I think it contributes to that idea. So, because in my notes, I have the notes of they skipped America, and then it was like, oh no, it's coming. It's fine.
How dare you?
And then I was like, okay, good, it's fine. And then later I have the exact same note of they skipped I Feel Pretty.
That comes right after her brother is dead.
Yeah, so normally it happens earlier, and it's just this, like, very, like, you know, Maria's all cut up in her own, like, love struck situation, singing about how she's, you know, feels pretty because a boy likes her. But here it's, like, tragic. Her brother has just died, and she's singing about how she's in love with a boy who killed her brother.
It's sandwiched in between. It's like, we see the rumble. I love so much that they call it the rumble. I love it so much. It's so stupid. It's like, yeah, we got to go to the rumble later. And so the death happened, like the two people get killed, and then she's singing, and then that song gets cut off by Chino arriving to her workplace, right? It's all really, it's
well. Yeah, I love that out, that extra layer of tragedy, because it's, you know, I love a good bleak tragedy.
I do too.
And to have that song come on, it's like her last, it's the end of her innocence, right? It's like the last hurrah, and it's so sad to watch. And at least, you know, instead of to a point you made earlier, Melissa, like, it's more sprawling. They're in a store, you know, they're going to different exhibits in the department store instead of just, like, in a back room, I think it was, like, in the original one. It really is sad to watch her go through that and, like, to know what's coming and try to, you know, spare her from the awfulness of reality.
Yeah. I will say I found the whiplash really hard. Like, going from that to I Feel Pretty, like, part of me wishes that they had taken a bit of a chance to, like, adapt that music a little bit, just so that, like, stick in, like, a minor key somewhere. Just, I don't know. Like,
ooh,
it just,
I love a minor key.
Yeah. Like, it just felt really whiplashy to go from the death of her brother to her singing. And I get that that was the point. I just felt like maybe we could have been like eased into that just ever so slightly. Cause it, just,
imagine,
it like caught
imagine
me really.
What it, imagine what it was like for her, Melissa.
I know. Yeah, yeah, that's fair. And
I think like, you're supposed to get the same feel that she then gets at the end of the song. Right. I think a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think Melissa's right. There's a point in like, you know, especially if you're a fan of the originals and just like the ebbs and flows of musicals in general, there is like a balance and there's a, you know, like a cadence to these things. And it's hard to get right when you're adapting something so old.
Yeah.
Cool where Riff and Tony are fighting over the gun. That's also kind of a bit of a different take than how it is in the original. This dance is like so jazzy and cool.
So jazzy.
I really just love like the different types of dance that we see throughout this, right? And the different, you know, there's lots of like Latin American dance in throughout it at like the dance and in America and things like that, and then like the music as well, and then like that contrast with like the jazzy feel of the Jets. It was just very neat to get those different things, and then this whole like them fighting over the gun, which is again like not really a storyline in the original as much, this whole like the gun thing. But yeah, I just thought it was neat that it was done as this kind of like Riff versus Tony, like Tony trying to stop Riff from getting himself killed, essentially, which is what happens.
It's just another tragic thing. It's just like easy. And then they're fighting over the gun that's going to, well, I guess it doesn't kill them.
It does kill Tony.
Yeah, I was going to say it doesn't kill Riff, the two men that die by knife, but
he buys it as well. So like, you know,
yeah, he buys
theoretically, if he if Riff doesn't buy it in the first place, then he Tony doesn't die, right?
Yeah. And the line, you remind me of your dad, as he's like buying the gun. I was like, oh good. That's probably not good.
Yeah, that's not good.
that's not what you want to hear when you're buying a gun. No, I'm just kidding. I think that scene is new also, right, Melissa? When he's buying the gun.
Yeah, the gun just kind of appears in the original. I was watching it and I was like, I don't know where this came from. But
and then, I mean, again, I know this is set in 1957, but touching on gun control, which is a major problem in 2021.
Listen, it's stay in Canada is all I will tell
them. We don't have our own problems.
No, of course. But, you know, guns are obviously a much bigger problem here. But I do think, to that point you just made, Melissa, about like it kind of appears out of nowhere in the original. Isn't that also true of the knife? Because I think that in this one, they kind of pay homage to it. Or like, you don't know who it was that actually threw the knife forward. Yeah. You just kind of, it's almost like Shakespeare is beyond like either stage left or stage right. And he's like, here, plot device. And you see the knife, you're like, no, please just leave it alone. Don't pick it up.
It's much more explicit in this one where they're like, knives, no knives, like we're not fighting with knives, right. And then they go off and they're like, we have to bring knives.
But well, and also that there's a lot of like the Jets being like, well, of course they're going to use knives, right? Like being like, of course right. They are going to bring knives to this fight even if we say no knives, you know,
right?
Which then, did they actually bring it or did the Jets plant this knife?
It's that natural escalation of like, you think the worst of the other group, so you're gonna act on what you think is the worst as opposed to like what the reality is, and there's that like that escalation that comes with that and how that leads to
shared destruction.
Exactly.
What's that?
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna take
laughs.
Yeah. Speaking of knives, we're gonna cut from our sponsors.
So smooth.
And we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Can I ask, it sounds like something I've been reading online is that Chino plays a much bigger role in this movie than he ever did in the original. Is that true?
Definitely. Yeah. Like, he's basically not a presence at the dance at all. So that whole, like, interaction, he sort of gets introduced at the beginning and then, like, kills Tony at the end. And you, like, don't really see him very much other than in the background in between.
It's really smart to make him Maria's date.
He's her date in the first one too.
Okay.
But yeah, he just plays more of a, like at the dance, he just kind of like disappears.
Right.
Yeah. I love that he, again, you know, talking about how some of the characters who had previously not really had stories, especially on the Puerto Rican side, have like more backstory filled in and, to have him be like him and Bernardo have the conversation where he's like, oh, I want to be part of the Sharks. Yeah. And he's like, no, stay out of that world. You're the smartest person in our neighborhood. Like, I want better.
And
for
you know he's smart because he has glasses.
Glasses.
Which is not in the original. They were like,
sorry, yeah. That was my John. I feel like that was my John Mulaney impression that I've been dying to get out. He has glasses.
It's just it adds that like extra layer of again tragedy where like his big brother basically, yeah. You know, it's like his sibling is the one that really has died more so than Maria's sibling in a way. And now he has, you know, the rage that he feels because of that is a little bit more like grounded in like real emotion and like character development a little bit.
You feel it too. You're like, do not go do that. It's such a bad idea. Don't do it. Don't go shoot Tony. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know he's going to do it.
Yeah, and it is so interesting. Does this happen? I don't know that it happens in the original, but like both him and Tony go to open the like door of the
That was a weird like
thing at the final brawl. Uh-huh. They stop short of like touching hands when they both, you know, like it's not romantic at all, but like it's that like, oh, like almost like a meet cute. Like, oh, you're here too. Let's just agree to open this door and not like fight each other.
So. Oh yeah, when they arrive at the Rumble together.
Can we talk about anybody's? Because that's also a change from the original.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in the original, anybody's is like a tomboy basically who runs around with the gang, and they keep being like, "You don't belong here. Go away." And then there's this line, which is still in the original, of "You've done good, buddy boy," which is this like kind of acknowledgement of like being part of the Jets and being one of the gang. And so now in this update they changed it, and so
how come I didn't bring up the trans character?
I was gonna say
I actually forgot
Melissa gave you till the second commercial break. She's like,
if you're not gonna bring it up.
Yeah, so anybody's is played by Iris Menez, who is non-binary, and then the character of anybody's is kind of officially considered to be like a trans man who uses he they pronouns in the character. And so they were talking, I was reading some things about how that felt like a very kind of natural adaptation for that character, and like had it been written now instead of in the 1960s, like anybody's would have always been trans. So
That was gonna be my question, whether this character like existed at all in the
it
original.
It is definitely like a tomboy who I think you're meant to believe is like still a woman, but just is like doesn't fit with like the like feminine girls wearing dresses and going to the dance and like wants to be part of the Jets.
Right. It feels like a thing where like, in the 1960s, they don't have the language for this yet. And that's like, you know, perhaps like, as you know, the best that they could probably do. I mean, even like, I've talked a lot about on Hold Up, we did an episode on like Chandler's dad from Friends, and we're like, that character would 100% be written as a trans woman. Like if it was written now, and that's not even like, that's like early 2000s. Right. So the 60s makes sense that that's what they give you. I thought it was really interesting. I was not expecting it from West Side Story.
And it's a lot like it's a lot more intense in this version of it, because it's like there is always this like, you don't belong here, go along, but like the misgendering and the ridiculing and the like really kind of transphobic things that they say are like obviously not in the original because it's not relevant at the time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like I could see some people like it's hard. Like I do wonder, you know, whether there should be content warnings before some of the stuff in this movie. But, like, there's like Hispanic slurs thrown around in this movie as well, and they're trying to sort of be true to 1957. While also, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult balance to try to, you know, because they did keep some, they changed things, but they did keep some problematic lyrics and lines, I think, I would assume,
for sure.
In the, you know, attempt to remain, loyal in some way, or, you know, keep it respectful to the original. And I guess there's something to like, if you keep shining the light on the wrong thing, then maybe that'll help. Like, you know, I can kind of understand their logic, but specifically the anybody's character, it was like, I was shocked that it was so explicit.
Yeah.
Like pleasantly surprised, obviously, but like they had the full online of like, oh, you know, I think that it's when they're in the police station right before Officer Krupke, and they're like,
girl,
oh, you're sitting on the bench, and he says like, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not a girl. Like it's very, it's not subtle, which I think.
I also think this movie is interesting in the way that like anybody wants acceptance from the white supremacist group and then that gets it and you're like, yay.
I don't know.
You know, it's like, oh, it's in some ways very heartwarming. In other ways, you're like, I won't think about it too hard.
Yeah. It's like, how do you shoehorn in this progressive thing into like this white supremacist group and make
people are complicated, you know?
Scene that was really hard is when Anita goes to the drugstore like that. I was like, oh, geez, this is so much worse than the original. And then I watched the original. I'm like, no, the original is still pretty bad. But yeah.
I saw it recently, really, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think in the original, anybody's is present
at the
store and doesn't leave. Like, at least in this one, the character leaves, warns Anita when, like, he walks out, and I think he sees Anita, like, the door opens. There's this really cool, like, two-shot thing.
Yeah.
And the door opens, and he basically whispers, like, leave. Like it's not safe for you here is I think what you're, you know, I think if you're familiar with the scene, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So anybody's just isn't there. And then the two girls aren't there in the original.
Yes.
And I think I think it's part of what makes it feel so much harder is like you see.
Yes.
Like that, like them, like trying to stand up for Anita and like getting like forced out. And it just like it felt like the buildup to it was like, oh, like they know this is going to be really bad. And like,
you see it turn. You see it like at first, they're like, how dare you come here and speak Spanish? Like after what just happened. But then they're like, okay, wait, hold on, leave her alone. Like they're like, then they turn from like a white woman with a Puerto Rican woman to like, okay, now we're all women. And like, we want to try to protect you from what we know is probably going to happen. And they get kicked out in a way that, to your point, Melissa, makes it much more harrowing. Like, to see people try to help her and to see specifically women try to help her before, you know, these men like toss her around like in this horrible way, is definitely makes it much more emotional.
It's a brutal scene. It's really brutal when you think about like why she's there, which is she goes there for Maria, who she's like Maria's partner, boyfriend, whoever has just has killed her. partner. It's like she goes there anyway, and then this happens to her. And ultimately, if it wasn't for Valentina showing up from the basement, this is awful.
Which is also what happens in the original. It's Doc comes up and yells at them. But I also really, the weight of Anita saying, like, calling Valentina a traitor, and kind of the weight of that, and then Valentina being the one to tell them all off, like, I've known you all since you're babies and now you've grown up to be rapists, like, this is like the scene is really, it was really intense.
They really did. I think it's so I hesitate to use the word cool, but it's so cool the way they updated it, the way they like added these extra layers, because they didn't shy away from the horribleness of the scene, but they made it they added these extra vague layers, like for Valentina to be a Puerto Rican character who married a white man. Like they say it earlier in the movie where she's like, Riff thinks I'm okay because I married a white man. He basically thinks, you know, they use gringo and gringa. Like he thinks I'm a gringa because I married a gringo, but like I'm not. But then Anita, like the tragedy of Anita going over there to help Maria, and then this horrible thing happens to her. And of course she's going to lash out, but only because this thing happened, and then give them false information. And then, oh my God, when she says traitor like that, oh my God.
It's really so brutal. Yeah. And then she says that Chino killed Maria, right?
Yeah.
She's like, Chino has a gun. It's funny because it doesn't start out as a lie, right? It's like, Chino has a gun. It's like, okay, so far, so good. So far, this tracks. And then he killed Maria. It's like, oh, well, he's gonna. Essentially, emotionally.
The other well-acted part of this is when Valentina has to go downstairs and she believes this to be true, and then she goes and tells Tony, and that scene where he's like packing and talking, you know, they're gonna, you know, can I borrow some money? Not that much money. And she's like, you can have money, like, you know, whatever. But I thought that scene, she carries a lot of that the way, and I think Tony's really good in that scene as well when he thinks that she has died, Maria.
He does this weird thing though, where he like kind of goes across the room from her, and they're like weirdly far apart. And then the camera's like, and I was like, Okay, yeah. I don't know what this is anymore. You're kidding.
Yeah, I did. I loved his initial, like the way she gently places her hand on his cheek as she's telling him, like it's so beautiful and sad. And then he like, as he's getting the news, he kind of like collapses under the weight of her hand and starts to cry before he goes across the room, I think is really sad, like really beautifully done.
She's so good. I think she, knowing that this is a thing that will, like, he's already spiraling so much, like, I mean, he's killed somebody. Does she know? I guess she probably knows at this point, but like, knowing that this will be a thing that will like wreck him, you know, and having, but still needing to tell him, I think it's yeah. really beautiful acting from Rita Moreno.
And she tries to say, life is more important. It's a better version of what I'm going to say, which is life is more important than love. But it's like the fact that it's Rita Moreno playing like that, that breaks up the Anita rape basically, is just another like layer that I wanted to call out real quick. Like, it's her watching like history repeat itself. Like, there are all yeah. these, for me, there was this extra thing of Rita Moreno's like looks of sorrow and heartbreak. Like, it's almost like she, at one point, Grace, I had the thing of like, oh my gosh, she's like the Oracle from the Matrix. Like, she almost like, she knows,
she's seen it, she knows,
yeah. knows what's gonna happen, and she knows how this is gonna go. So yes, when she goes to tell Tony, you know, like what happened, it's, she can't help but like thing, you know, and this is all headcanon, but it's almost like she's seeing history repeat itself, and she's seen obviously a lot of stuff, being the widower of a white man. It's, man, like I was so pleasantly surprised with how effectively they used Rita Moreno, not because of her acting, but just like plot wise, it's mm-hmm. kind of insane.
Yeah. So then Tony runs out yelling for Chino, and then Maria shows up. That's good.
Yeah, everything's gonna be fine, right? She's fine. Not actually dead.
No, she's fine. Oh, no. She's got a suitcase. Oh no, Chino, where'd you come from?
It's so funny because the original story is ridiculous in certain ways, and like Romeo and Juliet is ridiculous in certain ways. You can only give it
the end of Romeo and Juliet is absolutely, and like, sorry, so Will Shakespeare,
Billy, yeah.
Bill. And so it's like y'all met. Y'all like see each other across a dance and you're instantly like, I love you. I will die for you. Like, this is, my life has no meaning other than you. And I'm like, okay, chill. Like, you just met
like
each other.
Yesterday. Like,
yeah. You met yeah. yesterday. Like, I get that you're spending more time together in this one hangout than like most of the Bachelor contestants spend together, but like, still, it's excessive. And then this, like, him just like running out into the street, like yelling for Chino as if that's how this works, of like, like, what are the, he could be anywhere New York wise.
I don't want to be alive anymore. It's so brutal. And I didn't expect to care as much about like Tony's sorrow, basically. Like, I think it's pretty well acted. You know, I've seen Ansel Elgort in other things, and to be honest, I've never really cared about how he felt in a lot of other movies, just even on a character level. In this, it's pretty sad and harrowing. Like, knowing, I think for sure, knowing like what's about to happen helps a lot, but the craziness of him just running out to the night is pretty bleak.
I think this is Rachel Zegler's like best performance of the movie. The scene where she is falling over Tony, and then how like angry she gets with all of them, right? Like everybody. I think it's really good at the end.
I think yeah. she does it better than Natalie Wood does too. Like, I think it's more impactful at the end, where she talks about like, I can hate now, and yes. like, how yeah. many of you can I take out before I like, and still have one bullet left for me. It's like a very impactful moment.
Oh, that's quite the line as well.
And I believe they changed. They cut out some of the lines, like where like hate killed him, and it's now just like I hate now, so I can kill. Like there's a it's a little bit more subtle in a way that is very in a way that just works better. I think it doesn't take you out of it at all. There's no like silliness or as much of it. I think it's so. I agree that it's arguably her best moment, but again, it's a moment between the two of them, so that's on another level, as I've already established. And I think they changed the song that she sings to him as he's dying, I believe, from the original, because they didn't sing the Somewhere. They have now given Somewhere to Valentina. And so Tony and Maria didn't sing it to each other. But I think I prefer it. I'm just going to say it. I like this version better, this ending of what she's singing. And it's a quicker death scene. Like in the original, he's talking to her for a little bit. I'm like, why is he talking? Maybe that's why in this one he got shot twice instead of just once.
Right.
Because people said he only got shot once. Why is he dying?
Because the original, they're like running to each other. And Chino's like far away from them and then just like shoots wildly once, kills Tony. And you're like, wait, what? That was like very, this guy is like a sharpshooter. Like, well, this is very impressive shooting from Chino that he like didn't accidentally shoot Maria in this process. Yeah.
I mean, that would be very Romeo and Juliet that they both die, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't actually remember if in the original, because it has been a little while. I've since gone back and watched, like, after watching this new one, I've gone back and watched like a few like just videos of like highlights from the original movie. But I honestly couldn't remember if it was like Romeo and Juliet that they both die, or if she is supposed to live. Because I kept expecting, I'm like, oh my god, she's gonna turn the gun on herself. Oh no, Rachel, no. I'm glad that it's that.
One thing I say as we like come to the end of the movie, I think we've seen a lot of movies this year where we were like, oh my god, 2.5 hours is so long. This is like 2.5 hours, and I don't think it felt long. I thought it was pretty well paced. So yeah, it's got that going for it as well.
Yeah, their date in the middle, and maybe part of it was that like half of it was in Spanish and I didn't understand it. It felt a little bit long. The original is like them in like a dress shop talking about like, would mom and dad approve? And they've got like a mannequin with a dress on it and a mannequin with a suit on it. And they're like pantomiming, like asking their parents for like each other's permissions to marry each other. Like it's actually like a pretty cute scene. I don't know. I found their date kind of boring. That was like the part that I tuned out kind of in the middle.
Yeah,
I mean, listen, I took school trips to the cloisters where they were. It's like, there's not that much there. They did do the cool like lens flare thing with the blue light and with the church stained glass again. I was like, oh look, it's their thing now. Yeah, anytime
he speaks some Spanish.
He looks at his little note. What it means, and she's like, yeah, no, I know what it means.
Yeah, I know what it
speaks Spanish.
That was very funny. Yeah. But anytime they were looking at each other, I was just like, damn. Like I don't often believe the chemistry as deeply as these two were working for me personally. Like, I don't know if that's the universal take, but for me it was like, wow, I see it. Like, yeah, there's death coming for these two because they like each other too much.
They're too heavy. Can't be that heavy.
Right. I'm a, you know, like, yeah, they're in love. All right, sure.
Yeah, and they're like, I don't know, maybe it's just like my own cynicism, but they're like, oh man, I want to spend the rest of my life. And I was like, you met her yesterday. Like, yeah. What if she snores? Like, you don't even know.
You don't know her musical taste. What if she likes?
Yeah.
I don't know, something bad. But yeah,
unfortunately, I was much more caught up in everything that was happening around them than I think I am with them. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think they're certainly like, I mean, we've already talked about this, but like actor-wise and performance-wise, like if we're keeping everybody separate, then for sure, unfortunately, they kind of fall to, not to the bottom, but, you know, somewhere in the middle.
Part of me wonders if that's kind of the point though, right? Like the whole point is that their like little dance creates this thing that's like so much bigger than the two of them. So
yes.
Yeah, because they're daring to love.
But also like, you know, stupidly naive when they're like, it'll be fine. Tony's like, everybody loves me. And it's like, nah, dude.
I mean, to your point, Melissa, like it is, or a little bit to your point, I kept having to remind myself like, oh, it's Shakespeare. Like some of it is just so ridiculous. Like, really? I want to be with it forever? Like forever? Like, you know, and I love Valentina's line of like, really, you don't want to ask her to go for coffee first?
Yeah,
really. Like, she's like, trust me, I know where, like, almost like, I know where this is going. This ain't good.
Or even later, this whole, like, you know, like how quickly Maria moves on from the fact that he killed her brother. Like, I'm sorry, if you kill my brother, I'm not going to date you.
That's 100%. I do agree with that as well. Yeah. Like, it's so quick to just be like, let's sleep together.
Okay. She's just exhausted. She's like, oh, my brother just died. I love you, but I hate you. Let's just go to sleep. Like, I can't deal with this. No, it's a lot to process. And I think, you know, in the Shakespeare version, it's her cousin, not her brother. So it's a little bit more, in quotes, understandable. That, or it's a little bit easier for her to kind of get over it that fast. Like, it was my cousin. I didn't really know him. It's her brother. It's hard. I really did feel it this time. The line that she says, you let them, Maria says to Tony, you let them take you from me. Yeah. Like, you know, where she's not letting him off the hook, but she's saying like this whole thing got so out of hand. And like, it's really sad. It's really sad. And then Anita comes in. Oh, that song. I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. Anything else before we sort of wrap up West Side Story? Is there anything we didn't touch on?
I think that's it. At the very beginning, at one point, one of them is like, one of the Jets, I think, is climbing a fence. And then they like, he falls and they like catch him and then tickle him, it looks like. And I was like, oh, that's a weird. That's very nice of them to like not let him fall and like, oh, we'll catch you and then like tickle you.
A little tickle. You sent us a screenshot from a music sheet earlier, which if you'd like to repeat that line, that's great.
I have my old textbook for music history. And it's an excerpt from Tonight. Which, by the way, is just like an incredible song. Like the
Jets position
of like the Jets and the Sharks preparing for this rumble. Yep. Anita's doing her thing. Tony and Maria are like singing their version of Tonight. Like it's just very beautifully put together. But Anita's like preparing for like a sexy night with Bernardo when he gets back from the rumble. And the instruction for the line is opening melody now in uneven triplet rhythm sung sexily. And I just like. Like, yeah, she you know, this is the point of the line, and it's the point of, you know, she does a good job of it, but it still made me giggle because I am immature, I guess, but
it's
sexily. Do it again, but sexily.
Yeah, more sexily.
More of the sexily part. Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning, you know, at the end, this, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of problems with the original movie adaptation, the 1961 movie. You know, even Rita Moreno's character, they put bronzer is a generous way. It's basically brownface, put her in. And she's one of the few like actually Puerto Rican actors. And they still were like,
apparently she called them time to her makeup artist, and her makeup artist called her racist. Like, just it's so bad.
Oh, that's brutal.
So just like the wonderfulness of having, again, not just like real Latin characters, but like Afro-Latin characters like Ariana DeBose, who clearly is like my new religion, because I can't stop talking about her. It's beautiful and refreshing, and so nice for Rita Moreno to be part of a movie where she didn't have to put brown face on in the same movie, basically.
Yeah.
And like there's still some valid, like very valid critiques of West Side Story as a whole, of the fact that it was like, you know, its original inception with like one of them, I think it was Jerome Robbins, said the line, I've never even met a Puerto Rican, like when they were like writing this story. It's like not great. And so there's a lot of and I know like there's been talk of the depiction of Puerto Ricans in this story, and like that's been the lens through which so many people view that culture for a very long time, and like that's clearly problematic. Like it's a pretty one-dimensional view. So, you know, it's one of those where there's definitely part of me wishes that they had like really gone and taken kind of the general theme of West Side Story and then like totally adapted it and changed it, but they didn't do that. They kept like very true to the original, which is so it's just, I think, important to still acknowledge like some of the like frankly cultural appropriation that this story is. And they made some significant steps to try to improve that, but it doesn't like undo kind of the story it's based on and the problems there.
Right. No, it's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is interesting to consider like how Steven Spielberg is such a fan, obviously, and he used to listen to like the, you know, his mom used to play the soundtrack for him. I think it was of the Broadway musical as opposed to the movie. But I'm going down this road, Melissa, of like thinking, wow, what it could have been like had they tried to like make more changes to it. But maybe because he loves it so much, he didn't want to do that. But now if anyone wants to do that, they kick the can down the road like another 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah. Well, in 10 or 20 years, when they remake West Side Story, we'll come back. We'll be
we'll be covering it.
We'll be here. Okay, that's our coverage of West Side Story. We like to do a little bit of like, is there anything else you've been watching? Ariel, is there anything else you've been watching? Did you watch anything else this week?
Let's see. I watched a weird movie with, what's her name? Keira Knightley and a couple other people. The little kid from... that movie?
Silent Night? Is this
yes.
A Rabbit?
Yes, thank you. You read my mind. Grace.
Yeah, I have it ready to watch.
I watched it.
How was it?
It's wild. It's fine. like I would say like, okay, if quality of movie wise, it's fine. But yeah. Like, it's such an insane premise. So I would almost say it's like something that you would find in like maybe Black Mirror a little bit. Definitely like weird. I almost like don't even want to talk about what it's about, but it's like all these people get together on a certain night to do something and it's not what you think it is.
Roman Griffin Davis is the kid from
The other kid. Yeah, and the other
Matthew
and then
Good is in it.
The Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the little kid. What was his name?
Roman Griffin Davis. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
The best actor in the whole movie, like for my money. Okay. Like
he's good. I loved him in Jojo Rabbit.
No, I loved him too, also in Jojo Rabbit. But like he acts circles around like some of these adult, like well-known actors, Matthew Good and
Lily Rose Depp is in it, I think, too.
She is. She is in it. And then I watched Benedetta, which is directed by Paul Verhoeven. I think is how you say his name. Most famously directed Showgirls, but a lot of other things more recently. But I think that's like one of his most famous things. Such a wild movie. It's like nuns. It's very violent and also very erotic in parts, but very silly. It's hard to describe, but it was not a boring experience.
Vendetta. This is the movie.
Benedetta. That's the name of the name of the main character.
Okay. Hey, Melissa, have you been watching anything else? TV movies, whatever you got.
Yeah, so the only other like movie, I have a lot of like TV, you know, like Wheel of Time is great, you know.
Yes.
Anyone hasn't been watching
I'm gonna watch that soon. Yeah.
Yeah, highly recommend. You know, great Canadian baking show is on right now. Like that's really good. But the other movie that I've watched lately is I watched Fantastic Fungi on Netflix.
Oh.
And so some like conversation around that might be coming to an internet near you at some point soon. Cause yeah, there's like a lot of interesting things going on there. And I think it's like, it's very much like, here's everything incredible about fungi in general, which is great. I do think a bit of it is overhyping some of the research, but I also think a lot of it is like stuff people don't know, which is really great. So anyway, theoretically, Rich Filiberto and I are going to talk about it at some point. And I don't know if it's going to be a podcast or just a stream on Twitch or what we're going to do about it, but I will let people know once we figure that out. It's narrated by Brie Larson, which is funny. Yeah.
Oh. Captain Marvel herself.
I would not recommend eating and watching it. It was definitely like, I started watching it and then I was like, oh, I haven't eaten today. I should eat lunch. And then I like started and I was like, that's a terrible mistake. No, I have to finish this movie and like then eat. It's not...
Hilarious.
Yeah, I do enjoy eating mushrooms. I don't always enjoy watching them do their thing, so to speak. But good science recommendation.
Yeah,
also, yeah.
It'd be weird if you didn't have a science recommendation.
Yeah. Right. Suzanne Simard, who is a professor at the University of British Columbia, which is where I work, is in it. And she was recently name dropped in an episode of Ted Lasso for her research. Like, it's just a lot of fun connection there. She does some very cool research. So I do think like it's a super interesting, if you don't know things about fungi, like it's super interesting.
Cool.
I did catch your use of the word connection when you were talking about fungi. So I'm proud of myself for that one.
I've been watching the Beatles documentary Get Back on Disney Plus. It's been very good. I love the Beatles. I think this is super fun. It's been weirdly edited. I don't know if people see, they like almost like it seems like they like dubbed over, like it's like they're speaking but like their mouths aren't moving at the same. It's very the biggest thing that I've noticed about this movie, because it seems like the way they're reacting, it does seem like it's legit, the like exact words that they're saying, and it's obviously them. So I don't know, but it's been very weird. It's been weirding me out. But anyway, it's been very good.
Maybe they cut stuff out where it was like, we'll just have like, the meaty stuff.
Could have been. Apparently, Peter Jackson spent like 4 years working on this film. And I did not realize each episode is like an hour and a half. It's like, you know, it's a lot. Three episodes. But no, it's been very good. I think it's worth checking out if you have any interest in the Beatles. It's good. Not the science Beatles.
No. Very different.
All right, so that's what else we've been watching. Lisa, thanks so much for joining. What else do you have going on? Where can people find you on the internet?
Thanks for having me. People can follow me on Twitter at melissaw28. Generally, I podcast on the Patreon feed for Post Show Recaps, doing YA with Kevin Mahadeo. So we talk about young adult fiction. We've done the Mighty Ducks Game Changers show. We did Twilight and Hunger Games and Divergent. Next week is our first episode of Maze Runner. So we're kind of in this dystopian YA kick right now. So we're kind of, you know, those feel like the big three, the Hunger Games, Divergent, Maze Runner. So we had to do the third one. So basically, we're also on a bit of a Miles Teller kick. He's, he was great in Divergent, and so we're gonna watch him in Maze Runner too. And otherwise, check me out playing D&D over on twitch.tv/dmphilly on Tuesdays with Grace for our Dragonfly D&D in Space show, and then some Fridays also with Grace we do Humble Year, where we play cute woodland animals. I play a tiny mouse with a big personality. She's very fun. So yeah, twitch.tv/dmphilly if that's your thing.
Cool. Ariel, what do you got else you got going on?
I will just say, Melissa, very quickly, at one point when Grace informed me that YA was briefly turning into YA, it is one of the funniest like laughs. It's one of the hardest laughs sessions I've had like in front of my mic in a very
people laugh
time.
At it a lot, and like Kevin threw it out as like a little joke of like, oh, it's not YA, it's YA, because for the month of October we did scary movies. And like I laughed a bit at the time, but I didn't laugh. Like people would laugh every time I mentioned it, and it was a joke.
I think because also YA is already a bit silly of a name, you know. It's perfect. Like I think like it's there's a joke in The Simpsons where like it needs to be like funny at first, but then you like get used to it and it's really good. I think it has that, a little bit of that. You know, that's your brand now. And then for a month to be it's really good.
Just can't
I'm glad people thought it was funny. I had to watch a bunch of scary movies for a month, so at least something good came out of it.
Yeah, and then once I found out, I was like, all right, well now I have to listen to that. So it was so nice to have you on, Melissa. Such a thrill. People can follow me on Letterboxd. I've started to say more because that's like really where I'm most active. Letterboxd app, which is like a diary of movies for anybody who doesn't know. It's like super easy and makes things easier to keep track of. It's my username on there is AR_F as in Frank. I'm on Twitter at that other Ariel. And then on the patron side, Jessica Sterling, just Jess Sterling. I was, and Josh Wiggler. I always confuse their names. We do a monthly podcast. We actually took last month off for the holidays, but we'll be back this month, talking about some holiday movie that we haven't decided on yet. And hijinks will ensue. So that's my thing.
Cool. On Mondays, unfortunately Succession season 3 is wrapping up, but we covered the season finale this past week, and then we'll be back next week with one more episode to look back on season 3. Very, very fun. Also got some I'm not done with the HBO Sunday night, so look out for some stuff in the new year that should be fun. Yeah, I think we've covered everything.
Oh, Matrix. Matrix. Oh, yeah. Well, just for anybody knows, if you're a patron on the patron side, where we've been, Grace and I have been doing like a little mini series of covering the old Matrix movies and some of the franchise adjacent stuff in anticipation of the new movie coming out, which of course we will be covering the new movie on this pod in a couple
weeks. Next week.
Oh my God, it's next week already?
Yeah, damn. Next week. Comes out, yeah, so it'll be next week. Yeah,
I'm very excited.
I think it's, yeah, everybody else did all the rest of my plugs. That's great. I should have you guys both of you on.
Yeah, we cover your plugs pretty well.
Yeah. All right. That's it. Lissa, thanks for joining us. This was very fun. See you in 20 years for the reboot again. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.